We've gone another Sunday, and we're back there again. These last 3 weeks, we are telling this same story of that Sunday of the resurrection. It's as if we are holding that day up like a prism and are walking around looking at it, seeing how it refracts facet by facet. A couple weeks ago on Easter Sunday, it was from the lens of Matthew's account. You may remember the women coming to the tomb in the dark as dawn was breaking, and there were those earthquakes that shook the guards and opened the way for them. And then last week, it was through the facet of John's gospel. And it was on that resurrection day, the gospel tells us that the disciples were gathered in that same upper room, but the doors were locked out of fear. And today we use the lens of Luke's gospel, and today we are on the road. We're on the road with these two disciples who are apparently not of the 12 or now the 11, not a part of the inner circle, and so maybe that's why they were able to leave town, right? Maybe that's why they were able to leave, because people didn't recognize them by sight as one of the inner circle of Jesus' followers, and they're headed out of Jerusalem, and it wasn't until several years ago on our parish retreat we enacted this gospel that I had a sense of some of the danger and the risk that accompanies this journey, right? Place yourself in this moment. It is Sunday. Jesus was crucified on Friday. The movement has scattered, and they're walking down the road from Jerusalem, and someone comes alongside them. Could it be an agent of the empire tracking down the known followers of this Jesus of Nazareth? Maybe it's an infiltrator from the temple authorities wanting to find all those who had followed. And so I think there's actually some good reason for these disciples to be wary of what happens on the road. And so they walk along, and as they walk, they are joined all of a sudden by this fellow traveler. And this really strange and interesting phrase is used. The text tells us that their eyes were kept from recognizing him. Right? Passive use. Their eyes were kept. Why? Why were their eyes kept from recognizing Jesus? Is this is this God withholding something from them? Is this waiting for the big reveal at the table? Or were they just not ready? Could they not possibly take in what was happening in front of them? Why is it that we can't recognize Jesus, the Holy One, in our midst? What is it in us that we just can't see? Right? The Greek here is about knowing again, right? That's where we get our recognition. And I'm just stunned by the fact that these These disciples, even if they weren't with the 12, they were with Jesus for probably weeks, maybe months, perhaps years. And they cannot recognize him. Right? This knowing, this perceiving, they cannot do it. And we talk about this in this class that Michael and I are leading about using the Ignatian scriptural imaginal tradition to enter into a text. And whenever we do this, whenever we enter into a text, we remind ourselves that if we can't imagine Jesus in that text, it's okay, because the early disciples couldn't either. Which I find this to be actually connective and affirming, because in this we are not alone. Why could they not recognize Jesus in their midst? Well, I wonder if the scholar of a few decades ago, Werner Erhard, could be helpful here. He teaches us that you can't imagine a future. You can't imagine possibilities unless you are complete with the past. Now, by that, he doesn't mean to deny the past or to forget the past or to pretend as if it doesn't exist. No, he means to be complete with it, understanding it, knowing it for what it is, so that you can move to what might be. I find this to be true in my own life, that the stories of my past that I have not come to completeness with, well, they trip me up, they weigh me down, they short-circuit me when I try to see something new ahead. Maybe that's what was going on for these disciples as they take the back road out of Jerusalem. We take the back road a lot, I think. You know, those situations or those relationships that we can't bear to face? I know that I do. And it's no wonder for them. I mean, I have to imagine their hopes have been crushed. The years of learning and the ways of being they've taken on have come to this just abrupt halt. I mean, even this news from the women at the tomb, I think probably just seems to be too good to be true. And so, they're walking along, and along next to them comes this person, and what's just like so simply obvious that it's just stunning is what Jesus doesn't say. So there's Jesus. He has arisen. And what he doesn't say is, "Hey, it's me." Why not? It would have been so much easier. Jesus also doesn't say, "I'm back. Let's get our revenge." Instead, what does Jesus do? Jesus listens. "Why are you so sad?" Their response, again paraphrased, is, "Are you kidding? Have you not heard what has just happened?" And so then they help him to understand what they have experienced in this last week of their lives. And I don't know what it is like to imagine an eye roll of the risen one, but I kind of feel like that's what's happening here in the text. Because whether they are thick of head or slow of heart, he says, "This is what this story is about." And he proceeds to interpret for them, because remember, friends, Jesus interprets Scripture too. He interprets for them the story, the parts of the story that they cannot yet see. He doesn't contradict it. He doesn't remove it. He actually comes to completeness with it, trying to help them to see where their story is. And it must have taken a while, because when he has finished, or at least come to a pause, the sun is starting to set on the horizon. And they're walking along together, and they're coming close to this village, and there's this moment. And here again, it's this just interesting part of our text. It, you know, he made as if he were going on. Made as if he were going on. Again, is this a test? Or is this, you know, in some way, is Jesus trying to see, you know, like, what really has taken root for you? Or maybe he's actually been on a lot of journeys, and these were actually the two who chose to invite him in. But there's this moment, and Jesus makes to go on, and I wonder, is he peeking back? I wonder, are they looking at each other? Should we? What do we do? Because hospitality always involves a risk, right? We make ourselves vulnerable when we invite the other in, when we create that space. But there is something in them, right? Our text says, urged strongly. They urged him strongly. And it comes from this word that it's like you compel almost by force, that they should stay with them, that he should abide with them, that he should remain with them. And this word, stay, is actually pretty important because it's the very same word that Jesus uses earlier in the gospel when he sent them out, right? He sends the 70 out to preach that the kingdom of heaven has come near, and he tells them to stay in one place, to abide there, to remain with those people. And they have then taken that and remembered it and used that very same word here. Stay with us. They remembered and invited him in. Last week at our 7:30 service in our chapel, at the time of Thanksgivings, there was this really amazing moment. One of our parishioners, Joe Puglio, shared a story that he is glad for me to share now, which goes back a couple more weeks. It was Palm Sunday, and Joe and Kathleen were in our service there in the chapel, and Joe's phone rang, and he silenced it. And then his phone rang again, and in a little embarrassment and a little worked up, he got out of the chapel and he walked out to see what it was. And it was a call from his son, who lives in Florida, that Joe and Kathleen's grandson, Grant, who's 3, had a brain tumor and was going to have surgery the next day. And Joe and Kathleen were crushed, as you can imagine. And like those disciples leaving Jerusalem, they just needed to put one foot in front of the other. And so they continued on their Sunday routine. They went over to Noah's Bagels on Solano because that's what they do, and they went to go buy their week's portion of bagels, and as they were walking down Solano, Joe looked up, and walking towards them was a man and a woman, and they were carrying a cart with what looked like all their worldly possessions. And the man asked Joe if he could have some breakfast. And so Joe said, sure, come on in. Order what you want. And so the man ordered two breakfasts, and Joe ordered his bagels. And then Joe turned to look at the man, and the man looked Joe in the eye. And Joe looked at him, and the man smiled. And Joe says that in that moment, a wave of relief, a deep and settled peace swept over him and rested in his core. And he said that's when he knew he was having an encounter with the holy other. Friends, we're on the road together. We're in between places. We often are unsure of where we've been and unaware of what is to be. And we often can't recognize the people who walk alongside us or are in front of us for who they are. But it's when we come to these places, these moments, and are able to open ourselves up to create space for the other among us, it's then that we discover in the breaking of bread that it is the life of the world that has been with us all along.